The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Riaz Akbar, religious affairs correspondent for The Guardian. This is the Focus podcast. This week we examine one of the most controversial visits of the year, Pope Benedict's Great Tour of Britain. We'll be following the Pope as he journeys across the country and hear reaction from the public before drawing some conclusions at the end. But should he be here at all? Many feel the Catholic Church is deeply out of step with the needs of modern Europe, while others are angry at the expense met by the taxpayer, around £12 million. I'm starting my journey here in Heracles, which is a pub in the south side of Glasgow, where drinkers have mixed feelings about Pope Benedict's visit to their city.
Well, we know what the negativity is about because the church's mishandling of sexual abuse. They've got to be dealt with in a deeper way. Obviously, they prevaricated and they've led themselves into a bigger problem.
Nonsense, nothing. Don't care. What it'll do for Glasgow is cause one hell of a traffic jam all over the city. What it'll do for Catholics? Not a lot.
I'll go along tomorrow and so will my family to reaffirm the solidarity, because I feel we're being attacked from all sides at the moment and I don't think it's totally justified.
Well, those drinkers are going to be there for some time to come talking about this historic event. As for me, I need to get an early night because there's lots going on tomorrow. The Pope will be in Edinburgh meeting the Queen in the morning before travelling across to Glasgow's Bella Houston Park to celebrate Mass.
2 days, the United Kingdom strives to be a modern and multicultural society. In this challenging enterprise, may it always maintain its respect for those traditional values and cultural expressions that more aggressive forms of secularism no longer value or even tolerate. I confess to Almighty God and to you, my brothers and sisters, that I have sinned through my own fault.
Well, I thought that went rather well. Tens and thousands of pilgrims looked perfectly happy as they left Bella Houston Park. Now I'm on the sleeper train down to London. It's the only way I can get there in time for the 10 o'clock meeting in Twickenham. That's where he's going to be talking about education, and it's his only interfaith meeting, really, during the four-day trip. But possibly the most interesting event tomorrow is the papal address to the great and good of British society at Westminster Hall. And that's where we think he's going to be talking about the importance of religion in the public sphere. And it'll be really interesting to see how a largely secular audience responds to the leader of a church.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for a word of welcome on behalf of this distinguished gathering. This corrective role of religion vis-à-vis reason is not always welcomed, so partly because distorted forms of religion, such as sectarianism and fundamentalism, can be seen to create serious social problems themselves. And in their turn, the distortions of religion arise when insufficient attention is given to the purifying structuring role of reason within religion. There are those who would advocate that the voice of religion be silenced, or at least relegated to the purely private sphere.
So those were some of the highlights from Benedict XVI's hotly anticipated speech at Westminster Hall. If you know Benedict XVI, if you know the Pope, this was a classic papal speech about how you cannot run a society without religion, because that way lies ruin. He gives an example of the economic crisis, saying that the inadequacy of pragmatic short-term solutions to complex social and ethical problems has been illustrated all too clearly by the recent global financial crisis. And that's really at the heart of it. He's saying that you cannot take faith and reason out of society. You need to have religion, you need to have an ethical dimension, but the ethical dimension has to be based in a Christian tradition. which is great if you're a Christian. And if you're not Christian, it basically means that you don't have any ethics or morals and that you're not fit to run the government or its economy. I thought that this was going to be his big smackdown to British society, that he was going to berate the political leaders of this country for betraying its Christian tradition. And he did do a little bit of that. He just said that Christmas ran the risk of being banned, and I'm not sure that it ever has been. I think he's maybe read some scare stories about cities trying to ban Christmas to avoid offending other religions, but that's not really the case. So I think he got slightly carried away, and I don't think he really understands British society as much as he claims to. And now we've got quite a nice scene, actually. Even though it's really bitterly cold in Westminster, we've got thousands and thousands of people lining the street. They've got these huge flags. Some of them are protesting, obviously. And everybody's basically waiting for the Pope to come out, because he's going to be going to Westminster Abbey. And it's quite a good atmosphere, but it's quite, I would say, sedate, well-behaved, not crazy, quite reserved. In Scotland, they were really, really going for it because they knew it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. This one, I wouldn't say it was laid back, but it's quite formal. Not sure if I like it.
My name is Anthony Busk, and I'm representing Christian Watch, which is a charity set up to deal with issues of human values, but also the spiritual matter of our relationship with Almighty God. So we're very much in conflict with the secularists. We believe they're very much delusioned, and that there is a need to get back into the principles of fundamental values in our country.
Nina Watson. I come from London, so it's an easy trip for me. When bad things were done, it is right that people say, look, this was done to me and I want something done about it. And I want people to be sorry and say they're sorry. And the Pope is saying that he's sorry.
Campaign, a march and rally in central London to say no to the state visit of Ratzinger in the UK. I'm honoured to present now Sue Cox.
If someone had told the little girl that I was as 13 in that dark room when I was left to my pain 50 years ago, that one day she would be able to stand in front of her peers in her own country, in her own beautiful capital, and say what happened to her, then she would not have believed it.
My name's Mercia Powis, I'm from Brighton, and I'm here to say no to the Pope. I've got a condom. I'm not very good at blowing these out, being a lesbian. Obviously it's a very exciting day, and it's a very important day, being gay, and we definitely need to come and protest. We don't want to pay 20 million for this person to come here.
My name's Lucy Duckworth, I'm 28, and I was abused by a Catholic and C of E priest from the age of 5 to 11. It instilled such fear into me that I wasn't able to talk about it until now. I'm here because I've had no acknowledgement, and my abusers are still priests, still harboured and financially supported by the church, and still got unfettered access to children. I find it very sad that it's taken him to come over for me to be able to tell my story and get media interest. I've been trying for a while, but you know, so be it. What I find really sad, and I was saying this morning when I read the news, is, you know, all justice and campaigning aside, it hurts. It really, really hurts hearing him on the plane just saying he offers me sorrow. I don't want his pity, I want action. I want him to release the files that he has got on his paedophile priest that he is still harbouring. I don't need pity, and I don't need God. I'm an atheist. I need action. This banner here says, Oxford Surrey Girls Speak Out, because I need more people to come forward so that we can actually get the justice that we're owed.
You go back. Point is, you don't listen to him. He's a very intelligent, nuanced man. You're ignoramuses.
Stop advocating child abuse, mate.
Oh, well, you call it paedophiles because you're ignorant.
Yeah,
it's pederast. He does. What about social work?
You probably think the Holocaust didn't happen,
most,
didn't you?
Most,
stop advocating evilness. Yeah, mate, if you cared that much, you'd be with the Pope.
Most child abuse is committed by social workers and policemen.
Oh, man.
That's a lie.
So now we go from one extreme to another. We go from the thousands of people who opposed his visit to the tens of thousands who absolutely adore him and are desperate to see him. We're in Hyde Park for the open air prayer vigil. It's a beautiful autumnal evening, and I'd say there's about 80,000 people here. Very, very diverse mix, so lots of different races and cultures here, very different age groups. I've seen sort of 13, 14 year olds on their own on a night out in Hyde Park, and I've seen a girl in yellow denim hot pants, which I'm not sure is appropriate wear for a prayer vigil, but there you go, that's the diversity of London for you. Now, it has been a very long day. I have been earning my crust for the Guardian, and speaking of crust, the catering at this event is distinctly upscale. There's a very long queue for Pizza Express, there's a gourmet grill, and there's generally less of a burger and sausage smell than there was in Glasgow. No offence, Glasgow. So I've just seen the queue for Pizza Express has magically disappeared, and the reason for that is that all the catering will stop during the vigil. So that's from, what, 6.15 until 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock, yeah. Sorry, queue's closed.
So there you go. You can pray, but you can't eat. And let that be a lesson to you all. So I can't get a donut finger or a pizza from Pizza Express. Bad Pizza Express. I'm going to see if I can buy anything from the merchandise stall. I've just heard that they've sold out of flags. What's he sold out of? Let's just find out what they've got left. Anoraks. Buy an anorak if it rains. Get me through winter. There's a sweatshirt. A couple of nice books about Cardinal Newman. There's a calendar. Badges, fridge magnet. Oh, my brother likes fridge magnets. I'll get him a Pope fridge magnet. He'll like that. He's not Catholic, but never mind. Now, you're queuing up to get some merchandise. What have you got your eye on?
It's a book over there. I think it's got hymns in it. I don't know. Just a paperback book, and I thought that's a nice souvenir. So, yeah, that's what I'm after.
What do you think of the quality of the merchandise on offer?
It's fantastic, absolutely wonderful. And you can keep it for a long time, and it's a lovely souvenir of your day and Pope's visit.
I think the mood is renewed. It's great pride in one's faith and a coming together of people. My mum's very surprised to find there are so many Catholics here, and she's lived in London for 50 years and goes to Mass every day. So it's good to be, you know, amongst so many other Catholics who feel safe.
Coaches up my living room. All right, thank you very much.
Dear four of the people visit, it's 1:30 on a Sunday morning. I'm in South London and I'm on a coach up to Birmingham for the beatification of Cardinal Henry Newman. It's the final stop of the Pope's grand tour. Now, I've just been speaking to the coach drivers and they say it's a 2-hour and 20-minute journey with no traffic. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do at 3:30 in the morning in a field, apart from weep silently. But anyway, I'm here with some of the Pope's biggest fans, because let's face it, you wouldn't be doing this unless you really, really liked him.
Hello. My name's Charles Marriott, and I come from Balham, I guess.
What have you made of the visit so far? What are your impressions?
I think there's been a really disgraceful, I don't like to use strong language, disgraceful frenzy whipped up to wreck this visit by certain sectors of the media and life out there, and it appears to be going a lot better than a lot of people hoped.
What's your name?
Jimmy Mitchell.
And where are you from, Jimmy?
Nashville, Tennessee, United States.
And what are you doing in this car park at the moment?
Well, it's about 4:30 in the morning, and we're standing in lines already for the mass of beatification of Cardinal Newman.
Now, you haven't come from Nashville, Tennessee to attend this mass, have you?
I've come all the way just for this mass.
You're very dedicated.
Well, I love Cardinal Newman, and the fact that I've only gotten about half an hour of sleep is not going to stop me, so...
I'm John Hooper, and I'm the Rome correspondent of The Guardian, and in that capacity I cover the Vatican and the Pope, and I'm travelling with him on this trip. We're at Coughton Park, Birmingham now, and I'm looking up at a sky that's sending down just a fine drizzle, so I think that the Pope is being given a truly British send-off. I arrived here on a coach with motorcycle outriders, part of a convoy of coaches carrying the VAMP, Vatican accredited media personnel, and pretty much everywhere we've gone we've been encountering very tight security. Pretty much everywhere you go you run into this, because he needs now, since the 1982 attack on Pope John Paul, the assassination attempt, everything's changed. And of course, we've had a security alert on this visit. On Friday, we learnt of the arrest of first five and then six men on suspicion of planning a terrorist attack. On that occasion, though, I think that there was a relatively relaxed mood inside the Vatican entourage. I think that they had an early tip-off that this might not be all that serious, that these men had been taken into custody on a precautionary basis rather than as the result of hard evidence of a would-be attack on the Pope. Right at the beginning, Father Lombardi, who is the Pope's spokesman and our main contact with the entourage proper, made reference to precautionary moves and said that this kind of thing had happened in other countries which he had visited.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, peace be with you.
Well, the beatification of Cardinal Henry Newman was the Pope's final public event. And as thousands of damp but happy pilgrims start to make their way back to their coaches, it's time for us to offer some conclusions of the first state visit from a Pope. To do this, I'm joined by Stephen Bates, a colleague of mine at The Guardian, and from Austin Ivory from Catholic Voices. Hello, chaps. How are you doing?
Hello, fine. Exhilarated.
Yes, very good.
So there was a lot of build-up, a lot of controversy surrounding the visit. Let me start with you, Steve. Do you think the child abuse scandal was adequately addressed?
Well, I think it probably was addressed as well as Pope Benedict could in the circumstances. I mean, he was pretty fulsome in his apologies and statements of regret. I think you're never going to satisfy people who've been very badly hurt by what's happened over the years, and the Vatican is still in a certain degree of denial about what needs to be done to reassure the public and Catholics that it's treating the issue seriously. But he certainly said all the right things, I think.
Well, I think he more than thoroughly addressed the issue. I mean, it was quite remarkable. Yesterday, before Hyde Park, he met five abuse victims, then went on to meet members of the Safeguarding Commission of the Catholic Church. This is the first time, apparently, he's ever met safeguarding officers. And Bill Kilgannon, who organised that meeting, was just briefing us earlier and saying how the Pope was, you know, very impressed by the fact that in Britain all allegations are immediately referred to the statutory authorities, that there are independent people built in at every stage of the process. And I asked him, what did the Pope actually say about that? And he said, it's very important. So I think while that news was breaking yesterday, you had the protesters saying, you know, Catholic Church in denial. Well, I mean, I think that was just contradicted by both the words and the actions of the Pope yesterday.
Now let's talk about that protest. It's probably the largest anti-papal demonstration during a visit. What did you think of the nature of the protest and the numbers that turned out and the kind of speakers they had? Was it usual suspects or something out of the ordinary?
Yesterday, I mean, numbers aren't everything. But while about 80,000 were in Hyde Park, I think they had, and the estimates differ, I think the Met are saying 4,000 or 5,000 there. I think it is the usual suspects. I think they're largely sole intellectuals or very small organisations. But clearly the fact that there were a few thousand there means, of course, that some of their objections have struck a chord. But I have to say, I think most of their charges against the Catholic Church are based on half-truths and myths. And I don't think that the wider British public was ever persuaded by them. I think the British public demonstrated itself in these last few days to be open and receptive to what Pope Benedict had to say. There was never any large-scale, substantial hostility on the part of public opinion.
Hooray for the Pope! Let's talk about the response to the visit, not from the anti-papists, but from the faithful. Was the turnout larger than expected? To me, the numbers you're talking about didn't quite ring true. I don't think there were 80,000 people at Hyde Park, and I don't think there were 65,000 people here either. Let's talk about bums on seats, as it were.
Well, on that, I mean, these events were never going to be anything like as substantial as in 82 for all the reasons we know about, because of security constraints and the logistics and the fact that everybody had to come on a coach that was identified and so on. What I think is interesting, but they were full. I mean, you can dispute some of the numbers, but I mean, whatever, they were very, very large numbers. I've been at a lot of them, I know they were large numbers. But what's most interesting is the spontaneous turnout, the fact that there were apparently 200,000 lining the streets in London on the way to Hyde Park. There was at least 125,000 in Edinburgh. Now, it's this kind of turnout that you need to look at. It's how people naturally respond to the Pope when he's here. That's the spontaneous response that I think has been quite remarkable, has taken the media totally by surprise.
Well, I don't necessarily think we've been taken by surprise. I think we have we have been interested to see the degree of enthusiasm with which people have turned out, and the fact that they have indeed turned out in very large numbers. Whether he's reached beyond the Catholic community, or indeed beyond the mass-going Catholic community, to the lapsed Catholics, such as myself, is another matter. Whether they wake up on Monday morning and think, maybe I ought to give the Mass a try again, I'm not sure.
Steve, that segues nicely into what I'm going to talk about next. David Cameron, the source of all knowledge, said that Pope Benedict's visit to Britain has made us all sit up and think.
I think David Cameron's absolutely right. I think this visit has touched on something that I think people have responded to. Now, quite what that something is and what its fruits are, I think we're going to have to wait and see. I always said the success of this visit should be judged by whether people were listening. And I think people were, most British people were, listening respectfully and openly to what he had to say. And I think he has made them think. I think they sometimes haven't quite heard what he said because some of the delivery of some pretty high-fibre texts has not been perfect. But I think the visual image, particularly in Westminster Hall, when the ex-prime ministers were sitting there waiting for 20 minutes for the successor of St. Peter to arrive, I mean, really quite remarkable moments like that, I think have made actually quite a big impact on people.
I'm sure that's right. I mean, the mere fact of his being here and the sort of things he's had to say are obviously challenging to people. They're not pap, they're thought through things, and the biggest handicap has been, I think, his slightly monotone, heavily accented delivery, which has maybe impeded the message a bit. But actually the words themselves, yes, I mean, for a religious leader to come and say that, it certainly does make people think. Whether it changes them is another matter.
What was the Pope's message to British Catholics? I'm going to go to Steve first.
Well, I think it was a message of reassurance, and it was a message of challenge that they need to not only engage in society, but to proclaim their faith, which is a sort of message that popes have traditionally given to Catholics everywhere. But it's perhaps particularly necessary here in a society which is more secular and less Catholic than many the Pope himself is used to.
I think what the Pope was saying to Catholics was, get out there, organise, be present, because in this society, where there are, of course, so many different narratives, it's important that our narrative is heard. And, of course, the background to this was the state, under the last Labour government, taking increasingly secularist positions which didn't reflect the values of wider society. And I think there was a message there. It's not an aggressive call. It's simply saying, you know, be present, be there, speak, know how to... And also, in conjunction with other faiths, in conjunction with all people of goodwill, offer that narrative, because there are tremendous gifts in that narrative.
And finally, what is the future of Catholicism in Britain? Austin.
Well, I think it's looking pretty good. I think the Pope found a church on the up generally, boosted numbers, boosted by immigration, congregations full at least in the major cities. I think it finds also a church that plays its role in society in countless ways, serves society, particularly through its schools and its charities and so on. So I think the church is in pretty good health. And I think the future of Catholicism, well, it's guaranteed, I'd say.
I think that's rather a rosy picture. I do agree that some congregations are full, but parishes are amalgamating. The number of ordinations and candidates coming forward for ordination is pretty slender. And yeah, going up from a very low base to a quite low base. So I think there are causes for concern. The traditional sources of Catholic priests in this country have died away largely, and so it is still a faith which is under pressure, but it's made huge strides. When I think, when I was growing up in the 1960s, that church was quite alien and remote from mainstream society. It's changed completely. It's at the heart of the establishment, and Catholicism, and to be Catholic, is no longer a mark of social disfavour in this country, and that's a big achievement for Catholics in England.
Austin Ivory and Stephen Bates, thank you very much for your time. Well, that brings us to the end of this papal edition of The Guardian's Focus podcast. Thank you for joining me on my travels. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.